What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Hollywood Already Did It, your movie podcast for reboots, remakes, sequels, adaptations, and why we keep retelling the same stories over and over again. As always, I am your host, Blake Schultz, and with me is Terrence Tatum.
Hello, everyone.
And we are talking about, I have been saying the eighth, but I believe it's the seventh Mission Impossible movie. Great. Don't know when I invented that extra one. But at some point it happened. And you know what? No one's questioned me. Every time I see it, I'm like, well, you know, part one of the eighth one. And they're like, that tracks.
Sure.
Why not?
I've lost count. Yes.
We stopped throwing the numbers in after three, and it created another McQuarrie one. Could be Top Gun Maverick's third act. That's basically Mission Impossible 5.5.
Yeah. Yeah.
And here we are to keep on going with this story, why this one keeps coming back and what it does for this genre. Let's kick it off. Terrence, what did you think of the movie?
So this is my favorite like franchise that's been sort of long in tooth. I know Bond has been going on for a while, and I like iterations of that. There's some that I like more than others. I love the Craig franchise, but from 96 on, there's one film that I don't like, but two, we're not gonna hide that one. Two is the one that I don't like. But outside of that, all these films hold some type of sweet spot to me. Even one, which is very different than the rest of them. Three is very J.J. Abrams. But as we go along, Chris McQuarrie comes in and kind of just puts a stamp on it. And from that point on, the series takes just off to the races. And I don't know how, but each one of these feels like it ratchets up and gets a little bit better stylistically each time. I do still like Fallout more than this particular one, but this is a blast. Like, this movie is almost 3 hours, and I don't feel it. I'm like, oh, we're off the ride? We're done? Okay, cool. It does a good job of not... The action set pieces are here. That's what, obviously, you come in for. You're going to realistic action. You're not doing the CGI. But that... It's funny. This is a movie that has only, like, two, maybe two and a half real big action set pieces. The rest of it is just like you're just intense. It's just intensity from moment to moment. Like, they're chasing them, they're hiding, they're kind of doing espionage stuff, which we haven't had kind of folded back into this franchise since probably three, and which is kind of fun to have. And you're just on the edge of your seat. We introduced a lot of great characters, a lot of strong female characters. Hayley Atwell, why hasn't she been leading movies more often? Like, she is phenomenal in this, as also is Palm as Paris. We kind of have like a silent assassin. Like, you have a lot of just strong women that when this movie was over with, I was like, ah, part two, we may not get that next year because SAG just said no.
Yeah, a lot of good part ones this year that are really making you say pay and treat the workers better.
Yep.
Yes, do all of those things. No, yeah, I completely agree. There were a handful of moments where I felt like this one was getting close to being the... what's the best way of putting it? Parody is the wrong word, but like over-familiar. We're doing a lot of that first opening scene of people like trading dialogue. And probably is like, what, do we rehearse this? Where they're all going to be like, and then I'll say half of the exposition. And then you do the other bit. And what's really going to get them is when it comes back to Kittredge. That's what's really going to do
because
it.
Because Kittredge is there, we get a lot of those De Palma shots that we got in the first one, kind of like the half cock. I see what you guys are doing. Kind of just throwing it back to the original. Sure.
Oh, yeah. Very like, well, it's called the Impossible Mission Force. And should he accept it? I was like, oh, yeah, now we're almost playing this for laughs now. We're getting a little like... Fast X with the
explanation, like every time, yeah,
it's getting into like almost like joke territory with it. And I'm not mad at it, but it set a weird tone where like I noticed my audience kept then like laughing at the close up magic that he was doing. And I was like, I don't know that this is the right,
I don't think they were supposed
to, I don't
to
think laugh. This is it, but yeah. I am having a good time. but yeah, a lot of good characters. Very curious to see where it goes. They did a lot of like traditional spy stuff, and that's what I wanted more of.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that we had Paris as an almost classic Bond,
like Jaws
type villain. I liked the bomb and the puzzle. And I wanted more of that.
That scene is why I say it's not an action sequence, but it's so good. Like, I was like, I'm in.
But it shows me that a lot, that not just this franchise, but so many need to work on getting like smaller again. because that was almost more tense than the giant stunt
sequence that they did, which was great and I loved it, but I was like, I felt more intensity in that airplane scene where you're trying to get the bomb.
Well, yeah, and that scene also, you know, that Fiat is almost ripped right out of Lupin the Third. A lot of things in this movie, I was like, man, I can tell McQuarrie and Tom are just sitting down during lockdown playing Uncharted 2 and watching Anastasia and being like, we're going to do this train sequence.
It was a good time.
We're going to take this Fiat ride. We're going to take this. Yeah. Anyone who does any exposition is going to be doing their best Morpheus impression. And that'll do it.
Yeah.
And we're going to take a lot of AI stuff and all of that together coalesced into something interesting. I do think we're probably about to see way more AI stuff in movies than I really need, because I just don't think we're going to do it better than The Matrix or Terminator 2.
Well, it's interesting. it's interesting because obviously this script was done in writing and they were filming it before kind of this AI sort of renaissance or blow up has happened. But now it's kind of coming out like, yep, I'm the first new wave flag waver of this AI stuff. And I like it here, but you're right. As soon as it was over, I was like, I don't want anybody else to do this. Like, I do not need a major overarching thing to be AI, because this is going to get old real fast. And this one actually saves it a little bit, because Gabriel is such an interesting like being. Like, he makes it so that he's delivering a pretty solid performance behind AI, and AI is not the actual overall villain. But if it was, they're like, I'm checking out. I'm done.
I think that's coming, though. I imagine the next one is either going to be like a Terminator 3, Skynet's turned down the bombs, or we are going to get our Agent Smith embodiment of this thing. Like, it's going to come. And it's sort of where I am like, man, we did this so well in the past that it's interesting that now that it's like here and everyone's talking about ChatGPT and OpenAI and open source and all these things, the template's sort of been done. Like, right. Even the like the eye in the club, I was like, yeah, that's Age of Ultron and Jarvis and Ultron when they turn on.
Felt very Ultron. Like, I was sitting, I was like, this is a cool shot, but where's Iron Man?
And I don't know that I felt like they really threw in anything new with that theme to play with beyond just being like, it's here and everyone wants it. Yeah. And I was like, right.
I think the only reason that scene actually even worked for me, because I agree, like, I'm looking at him, like, oh, that's a cool shot, but I've seen that before. The only reason that worked is because the characters were so interesting in that moment. Like, bringing Vanessa Kirby is just anytime
she
steals it. But when you bring her back into the fold and put her with Gabriel, that just made that intense, because it's a very intense sequence and intense scene, and then it leads to an even more intense like scene with Ilsa and all of them. But I just, like, that point at there, I'm sitting like, oh, if this wasn't being, it's a lot of care. Like, you have those, the actors and Chris, as much as you see, like, yeah, we've done this before, we've seen this before, but because they put enough care and a little bit of character piece, and we've been with these characters from 96, so kind of built in history and built in sort of like, all right, I'll deal with some of the BS that you're feeding me, because I'm attached to him now.
Oh yeah. And I'm curious, it's an interesting chance to go back to Mission Impossible 1's roots, because I feel like as the franchise has gone on, similar to Fast and the Furious, we're getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
It's become
and
more
bigger
stunt driven than it has espionage
or, and like, that first stuff. One is like, hey guys, have you seen this internet thing?
It's a trip going back to watch that movie now. Here's a phone book. I found this out because of the Bible that was in a hotel. Guys, they don't put those in the hotels anymore.
And I feel like the best thing to ever do with like an AI tech, it's everywhere, is to unplug it and be like, okay, well, the team is now in this whatever bunker. Everything's analog, which I dug those moments of like, well, we've got this old satellite we pulled out from the Cold War. This is the last one.
Yeah.
It can't do anything. And I was like, oh, eight is way more of this.
Into that.
That's where I'm like,
yeah, like the sequence when they were feeding him in the ear stuff, and all of a sudden they're like, I'm being blocked out, like that whole sequence. And then you're hearing another voice, but it sounds like a Simon Pegg's character. You're kind of like, oh, that's the sweet spot. Like, that's what you need to get me more of. Like, them being the AI is working, like, any technology is working against Ethan. And so now they kind of just have to go off the grid and be by themselves and be alone out there.
Yeah, which is like, it's another thing that, you know, The Matrix did very well of like, well, we can be on this line. How long do we have? We're going to get, it's everywhere. Everybody is connected to this system. And so I'm like, yeah. If we're going to start stealing, go all the way.
Like,
get into it. Because it's an interesting thing to do and play with. But I think right now, in all of the other times that we've done AI stories, you know, it's almost always been a Terminator. It's the missiles. Mm-hmm. It's going to start World War III. It's going to turn us against each other. We can't trust anybody. I think what the first Matrix did really well was have it's your world. But when we started thinking for you, it became our world, which is, of course, what this is all about.
Right.
And I feel like now the conversation around AI is less, we're becoming dependent on it, and more, it's going to start affecting the labor force and the job force. We're not even talking about, can ChatGPT launch a missile, because it can barely get me a recipe.
Right. We're talking about taking the blue collar everyday working positions of folks.
And so I think that's what I hope this gets more into, whether it is the replacement of like the AI can just be Ethan Hunt. Why do we even need,
right?
Why does the Impossible Mission Force need to exist? Because we don't know why.
Right.
But yeah, we don't know why Kittredge is there. So it could very easily be like, no, you don't understand, Tom. I'm on some Iron Man. Isn't this the fight? Isn't it why we fight? So we could end the fight and go home. Like, don't you want to go home, Ethan? I hope we sort of play more into that.
I have a question for you. Because this movie began with basically a cold open with the sub, and we as an audience get ahead of Ethan Hunt. Like, we know where those keys are and what they do, whereas Ethan Hunt's like, I don't know what this is. Does that bother you that we as an audience are well aware of it, but our characters are not? It didn't affect me, because my problem with Mission Impossible 3 is that no one knows ever what the rabbit's foot is. Whereas this one is like, we're going to give it to you now, and our characters don't.
It felt a little rabbit's footy to me. There were moments where I was like, okay, we are now chasing the part of the key for the part of the key to make the key. What does it unlock? Who knows? Because we do get ahead of it in that, like, clearly whatever it is there.
Mm-hmm.
But at no point, I don't think at least, are the people in that sub like, well, this is the source code.
Right.
So there is still the like, well, what is it? Is it the source code? Is it, it's like the beating heart of the beast, like whatever it is. It felt very, oh man, what is that story of like, you need to unlock this, and then you have the Davy Jones. It's the Davy Jones story.
Mm-hmm.
And it is at the bottom of the ocean. We're doing a lot of,
right.
Which is the other interesting part about the movie. It gets almost like mythic and Nordic, which I enjoy, but no, that didn't bother me too much. I did kind of want to get in the middle, because we started hitting my Dial of Destiny problem where I was like, okay, every scene is becoming the key has changed hands and the key has changed hands. I want to get to what is the key and where are we going? And obviously that's part two.
That's up second. Yeah.
What bothered me more is the flashback to, oh, this is this crime that Ethan committed, and we've all done these horrible crimes. And that I was a little like, okay, we're now sort of like fitting in some lore, and it feels like we're doing that to pad out the next one. It feels like the next one should just be a race to the sub,
right.
And now we're going to intercut it with Mission Impossible Zero.
And whatever Ving Rhames Luther is going off to go do. Yeah, I agree. The background with flashback stuff was the one thing that because it doesn't get answered at all here. It's just like, we're going to place a couple of seeds here and we'll deal with this in part eight. Where I was like, guys, if you're going to put this in here, you got to give me a little bit more here. Otherwise, yeah, I don't care enough that they have some type of attachment. They can just know each other and that be the end of it. I don't need to have a backstory to it.
And you do get a little bit into the fridging situation when you do that, where when they showed the girl that we don't know who died, and then Elsa, and then Haley Atwell, I was like, can we not think of anything else to motivate this character died?
As soon as Elsa died, I was like, oh, so this is just a repetitive pattern for Ethan. Are we murdering all the women in his life? Because if that's the only thing that moves him, you're now making this character very one-dimensional.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm starting to see it more and more recently where I'm like, okay, we got to think of something else, guys. Yeah. Killing the girl isn't enough anymore. Any more than when it's a story about a woman and they're like, well, she was abused.
This is, yeah, like she had.
And it's like,
she was domestically. We got
to think of some other stuff.
Something else has to happen. As soon as Elsa died, and one part of it is because I love Rebecca Ferguson, but the other part I was like, wait, that's the motivation? Is there nothing else that could motivate this guy?
And he's now projecting these two women and probably his wife, who we've met, this girl he's never met, who has now like betrayed him three times.
Multiple times.
That was sort of my one, like, guys, there's a part two coming.
I will say, I do love the part when they're in the train and he's like, do you trust me? And she's like, nah. I'm like, that's the correct answer.
That is fair. You're jumping across a train with a piano falling with a man who has basically been like, hey, look, your life is worthless.
It's irrelevant to me.
And I have a pitch for you. Wear this mask and then join my secret cabal of people. If you're wondering, none of us are happy.
No.
But hear me out. Your life, what life?
Yeah, you have nothing.
So do it. Do you trust me? No.
No. No.
Yeah, all the train stuff was great. The giant stunt was also big enough where I was like, okay, smaller next time because we're not topping this, Tom. Unless you're about to swim under ice in real life to unlock this.
Don't tempt Mr. Cruise.
I mean, he's still got to go to space and make that other movie. So I don't know what's left here unless we're going to do Mission Impossible 1 and he's going to drop down further.
Right.
But I did love it. Watching even just like this skin flap when he was going, I was like, he's doing this. This is insane.
He is nuts.
Like, what a great moment.
You don't have actors like that. And that's why, as much as like I kind of give crap to a little bit of these things in this movie, I'm nitpicking because I loved it so much. When you look at it, you're like, they don't create people like Tom.
No. No, we don't. I'm not even going to sit here and be like, do you remember when? No, we don't.
No.
Because that's bafflingly insane. We are on strike. Some of it is for safety. That is not safe. Of course we don't have people like that.
Yeah. Insanity.
It is what an awesome IMAX experience to just be like, whoa. Like
my breath. I was like, because I'm like, every time he does, I'm like, I know this crazy man did this, and that is that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Won't be me, but congratulations, Tom.
Oh yeah, no, it was very impressive to me. The stunts, picking something that probably by accident ended up being more relevant than ever.
Right.
Doing a lot of classic spy stuff. I just sort of hope, because even at the end of that stunt, when he blasts through the train, big laughs. And a part of me was like, are we supposed to be, getting into like Marvel Fast Furious stuff now. Are we going to bring it back? Are we coming back? Or are we just going to get bigger and bigger, goofier and crazier? Because if that's what the movie is, then we got to get a best stunt Oscar going.
Tom should have gotten this by now. It should just be him and Keanu Reeves going tit for tat to see who is the best at doing the stunts.
Yeah, we got to get that. It was a good enough cliffhanger. Like, it's interesting having Spider-Verse in there, which like did sort of like stop in the middle of a scene. And this was a little bit closer
felt more like a closure of this story. And then we'll go on to do the next. And it seemed, what I've heard is Tom wanted that. Like, Tom didn't want this to end on a cliffhanger. He's like, I want this to be a satisfying film on its own. And then we continue on to the next one. Actually, I like both. I like Spider-Verse. I love Spider-Verse and I love this. So I they're different ways to do it, but I'm not mad at this one. I like having a little bit of closure and then like, all right, cool, we'll see you guys in it, well, probably 3 years now.
I was gonna say I was less frustrated by Spider-Verse's ending when I thought we could make a movie in a few years.
Right.
I am now like, oh man, the working conditions were bad on that project. Damn. So we gotta fix that too. There's a lot of work to be done. And I don't want to be that guy that's like, but I want my Spider-Man movie. I want the conditions to be better first.
I do. Yeah.
I do want my movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was great. I'm in. Let's keep them going.
Yeah. That's, as long as Tom wants to do it, let's do it.
I haven't seen box office numbers. I assume it's huge.
It's doing, yeah. I mean, it's 250, it's like 248 worldwide already. It's done well. And this one's a little bit odd because it decided to open on a Tuesday.
Well, we had to get out of the way of Barbieheimer.
That's why they wanted to get a couple more theaters of Dolby and IMAX before Barbenheimer come in and steal everything. So it's going to be interesting next week to see. Missions are always leggy, so they never open massive in the States. They're always like around that 75, 78 mark. They're still in there this time, but they usually continue on. I think that'll be the case again this time, because once Barbie's going to open huge and then probably drop off, and Oppenheimer's going to be always sort of in the
Whether we like it or not.
Right, that's an indie movie, yeah.
That's going to be in every IMAX screen for like 7 weeks. It doesn't matter what we want.
Nope.
Yeah, I think that is our show. We will see everybody. I think next Barbie, I think, fits the bill.
Mm-hmm.
Might as well dash in some Oppenheimer while we're there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can follow the show on Hollywood Already Did It on Twitter and TikTok and YouTube, where Terrence also does our show reviews and his trailer reactions and everything else. And you can follow me at, as always, Blake, and Terrence at Terrence Tatum. And we will see everybody next time.